Good evening, everybody. Okay, Flow Oral Care are an international team made up of experts in engineering, design and dentistry, driven by a desire to improve healthcare outcomes for all. On their website, Flow Oral Care's motto is, "We're putting the mouth at the front of everyday healthcare." Will founded Flow Oral Care in 2020, having previously held commercial and management roles at various companies, including HelloFresh. He is passionate about the future of everyday healthcare and placing power in the hands of consumers in order to improve lives. Dr. Cadd has a wealth of experience from the NHS and private sector and is focused on giving dental professionals the power to utilise screening, monitoring and advanced detection of disease in patients. Good evening to you both.
Good evening, Claire.
Good evening, Claire.
And a big welcome to you both tonight.
Thank you very much. I think Cad also deserves a special mention. Cad is dialing in from Tokyo, I think. I'm in London, so it's an early start for Cad.
That is commitment, Cad. Thank you so much.
Okay. It's an interesting chat. I can't wait. It's 5 a.m. over here, so it's good morning from me.
Wow. And maybe that's why it's good that we're doing an audio chat and people can listen back. And you know what I mean? You're not on camera right now, so hopefully you're nice and chilled.
Exactly.
I feel a lot better than a podcast. Over to you, Claire, for our first section.
Okay, I've just got a few questions that I'm going to ask you and you can take it in turns to answer. So the first question is, what is your name and occupation?
Okay, I'll start there. So I'm Will Welton. I'm the CEO and the co-founder at Flow Oral Care. So I suppose my role is based on the day-to-day management of the business, strategic direction, and ultimately trying to change the way that that we perceive oral health and its impact on the rest of the body, and also how we manage that and how we take action. So that's me in a nutshell.
Hi, so I'm Dr. Cadd Shah. I have two jobs. So I am a general dentist half of the week. So I treat patients in the NHS and privately. And then the other half of the week, I work with Flow Oral Care, where I work with dental partnerships and diabetes partnerships. And also I work a little bit clinically. So I do some clinical mapping so we can really focus on other dental care professionals really getting and seeing the value of using saliva testing in their day-to-day life to improve their patient care.
Okay, thank you for that. The next question is, what is your role with working with people who have diabetes?
Okay, so we're relatively early on in our journey, but I think for our role in healthcare generally is helping people manage their oral health, and crucially in respect to diabetes and managing the control of that. So I think certainly all of you as an informed diabetic audience will be aware of the links on gum health and periodontal disease and actually increasing insulin levels and that traffic being two ways. So our role in the diabetic community is to sound the alarm, essentially, if your oral health is starting to either affect the management of your existing diabetes or increase the risk of someone developing that. So think of us as a protection mechanism. And the way that we're going to protect is through early visibility and saliva testing. Cad, you might be able to expand on that in a more medical tone.
Yeah, so I get to work with diabetes patients in two ways. In my dental job, I get to actually meet with the diabetes patients, treat them, and see what impact diabetes has on their day to day. But with Flow Oral Care, we get to focus on prevention, and with diabetes patients in particular, I'm sure you're all aware, it is all about prevention. Once you have certain oral health conditions, the trajectory can be, it can go sort of really bad, really fast. So working with Flow Oral Care is all about giving patients the visibility to what's going on with their body before things have gone wrong, so people can take action.
Okay, thank you for that. Next question I wanted to ask was, what does mental health mean to you?
What does mental health mean to me?
Yes.
That's a very good question. What does mental health mean to me? I think mental health for me, I think peace of mind in many ways. I think mental health is, I think it's, you know, it's a hotly contested topic these days, and it's increasingly important. So for me, mental health is, that's peace of mind and acceptance with your position in life and the way that you're addressing various challenges. I think we're all becoming better as a society in terms of methods to deal with that. Probably still quite a lot of work that needs to be done, I think, in the male community in terms of actually talking rather than absorbing. But I think, yeah, that would be what mental health means to me.
And for me, mental health, just to add to what Will said, means sort of looking after myself and my well-being so that I can continue to look after others and make sure that I'm feeling good and looking after my emotions as well as my day-to-day.
Okay, what do you both do to improve your mental health?
Very good question. So I've got two main forms of therapy which I rely on. Sadly, I'm just recovering from an elbow operation, so I haven't been able to rely on those kind of two crutches normally. But for me, I'm a big believer in, I suppose, three things for mental health. For exercise, I think, you know, it's the power of sweating things out, endorphins, community through sport. That's really important to me. I'm also a big believer in cold water swimming. So I think that's obviously good for your muscles. I think I often find if you can get in the icy depths of wherever you go, whether it's the sea, whether you go to the Serpentine in London, I think that gives you a fantastic sense of mental fortitude and just puts a lot of worries and anxieties into perspective. So I think those two things. And then the third thing for me would be the power of routine. I think when you're mentally, I think when things are more challenging, there feels like a lack of order and chaos, and that can be quite unsettling. So I think just establishing a basic routine and then being able to commit to that can often provide quite a comforting anchor and you know, an element of support, which can be really powerful to build on. So I think if those would be my three main coping mechanisms: exercise, cold water, and routine.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, and for me, mine are quite different to Will. Those are quite good. For me, looking after my mental health would be a little bit of exercise as well. Mainly for me, it's waking up early and doing some yoga and stretching my body. In both my roles, I have a lot of face-to-face time with other people. I'm always communicating, so it's nice for me to have some quiet time to just stretch and sort of relax and focus on myself. And the second biggest one for me is playing with my cat. I have a little Scottish Fold cat. I feel a lot of mental health support and just playing with him and nurturing him really gives me a lot of support. And my final one would be being social, actually, spending some time with my friends and family, switching off from work. That gives me a lot of comfort and looks after my emotional well-being.
Thank you for those answers. Another question, do you feel people with oral health complications have risks of poor mental health?
I do, absolutely. I think it sounds like a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's a truism. And I think, you know, the power of a smile and feeling comfortable in yourself, that is pretty key to how you feel in terms of how you perceive other people to be looking at you and how you feel on the inside. So I think if you've got poor oral health, whether that is, I think that you're not with the appearance of your teeth, bad breath, whether you're worried about your gums receding, whole range of other things. I think that definitely has an impact, and I do believe if you feel good, then you're gonna project a feeling of looking good, and that confidence can be quite infectious, not only to yourself but to other people. So I think that's definitely linked up, and like all aspects of kind of physical health, I think when you are, you're feeling good there, then that's only going to be a positive thing on your mental health.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I agree with what Will just said completely. I think a lot of people forget that with dentistry, we see our patients quite often, and a lot of our appointment time is spent on talking about people's emotions and how they're feeling and how their smile is affecting how they're feeling. Like Will said, your smile will affect how you feel, but also people forget that your oral health can affect your mental health, because when you laugh, your teeth are involved. When you're eating, if you've got an oral health complication like pain, you can't do your day-to-day eating, drinking, even sometimes having a bit of ice cream can really affect you. So, preventing these oral health complications will look after how you feel, and then if you look after how you feel, then it's good for your overall well-being.
Okay, thank you. My last question of this section is, what do you do particularly to help people who have diabetes with their mental health?
That's a tricky question for me. I think my exposure to the diabetes community is certainly growing through Flow. There's community support groups that we've presented to. We're giving our tests to diabetics. We're speaking to the likes of you guys now. But I don't think, I think beyond that, my exposure so far has been limited. So I'm keen to grow on that. But I don't think I can expand any more quite yet.
Yeah, I guess I have the luxury of working with diabetic patients. I would say what I do is, I just open the conversation. I open the door so that any diabetic patients that I meet feel comfortable to discuss how they're feeling and what's going on with their oral health, their general health. It's more just about me opening the door to the conversation so people feel comfortable to let me know what's going on.
Thank you very much for those answers. And now I'm going to hand over back to Tom to the next section.
Thanks, Claire. Thank you, Will Card, for an amazing 15 minutes open segment here. Just getting to know you guys a bit about your journey, your career, but some really important questions about mental health, what you guys do, and I'm talking in relation to diabetes as well. So really, really interesting stuff. Hello, guys. Lovely to have you here tonight. What I want to do is, in this section, two sections coming up, talking a little bit about you guys and your career and your involvement and on where you began and where you are at now. And then we'll talk about Flow Oral Care and the company, Will. And then we'll talk a little bit about oral health tips and some bits about diabetes as well. So, hello, guys. Can you tell us a little bit about you, of where did it all begin? Why was this sort of area interest to you? Why did you want to go into dentistry? Where did you study? And what sort of opportunities have you had working in this sort of area, industry?
That's a great question, Tom. I'll start here. I'm gonna have a more unconventional route. So first thing I'd say is I'm not a dentist. A lot of people, not all, but I think some entrepreneurs often start businesses in a sector where they have a particular edge or area of expertise. That's not always the case. And for me, this was about an area of interest. So I started my career in the drinks industry, working at Diageo. Then worked at HelloFresh as well, and then back at Diageo for their ventures arm, investing in small businesses. So I think for me, there was always an interest in smaller businesses and doing things slightly more disruptively and changing the status quo. So on a kind of commercial and a career level, there was definitely an appetite for me there. And I've always seen healthcare as a particularly interesting sector because it is, because of the size of the opportunity, because of the impact that you can have. And I think also just because of the reality that it is very old fashioned in some ways still. We've seen a huge amount of positive disruption and technology changing other industries, but it's still really catching up in terms of healthcare. And I think, yes, if we look at kind of just a very, very broad example, in COVID, a lot of the beds were being counted, you know, using a clipboard in terms of vacancy. So I think there's still a long way to go with that. Mm-hmm. And dentistry as a kind of sector within healthcare stood out to me as something that was, I suppose, two things. Firstly, very quite old fashioned and in need of a kind of shift forward. And secondly, kind of underlooked as an aspect of your overall health. And I think, you know, you take your teeth for granted when you're younger, and then once you start to get a bit older, you think, okay, I need to take a bit more care. And I think many people are completely unaware of the links between oral health and the rest of your body. And that was something that really interested me and Javier Navarro, my co-founder. So what we set out to do was build a subscription system, which we thought could be a platform for oral health management. So at the time when we started Flow, there are a lot of direct-to-consumer subscription models, from contact lenses to medication, recipe boxes, razors. And we thought it was a really interesting opportunity to build a business there, a strong consumer brand within the dentistry field. Start with the products and then move on to what we saw as the really interesting opportunity, which was using saliva as a diagnostic tool and enabling patients, whether those are diabetics, people suffering from other diseases, oral care diseases, and dentists, mm-hmm. the ability to understand that there is a link between oral health and systemic health, and ultimately build a preventative routine rather than this, you know, this very reactive approach to oral care, certainly in the UK, which costs huge amounts of money, you know, 5 billion a year just in terms of managing gum disease, and then you've got a whole load of other diseases which are caused directly by that. So that's, in a nutshell, that's my background. So not a dentist, but really interested in smaller businesses that can have a power, a purpose for good, and specifically dentistry because of the fact that I think this is a really important aspect of oral health. And I think if we're going to change the way that we manage healthcare globally, and especially in this country, if we stop turning the handle on the sickness machine and moving towards a much, much more proactive routine, a big part of that is early testing and diagnosis, and that's where we're coming in.
No, that's really, really good. Well done. And what about you, Cad? What about your career to date? What got you interested in going down the dentistry route?
Yeah. So it feels like it was a very long time ago. I did have a bit more of a conventional route. I studied in the University of Birmingham. I did my 5 years there for dentistry. And the reason I wanted to study dentistry, I was a bit conflicted, actually. When I was doing my work experience, I was thinking initially of going to a social care route. And then I also did work experience at a Birmingham radio, which was fun. And then I really fell in love with my dentistry work experience. I wanted to do something where I worked with people. I wanted mm-hmm. to communicate. I wanted to change, help people and help change their lives,
yep.
which sounds really corny, but I really wanted to. I really liked that in dentistry, you get to see people regularly. So you get to really build the relationships, get to know people, but also do something with my hands, something quite sciencey. So a little bit of it all. And dentistry really provided me that great opportunity to do a bit of everything that I love.
And do you think it's really important, from what I'm getting from you, is that rapport and that connection with that person coming through into your clinic is so important to build that trust and help with that mental health and potentially someone linking it to diabetes as well. They might be coming into the clinic with so many worries in their heads and worrying about potential complications. And I guess it's so important to have healthcare professionals like you, so positive and nurturing and welcoming. And like you say, is listening into them and saying, how are you? And what can we do? And you know what I mean? Yeah, I guess you have to build that connection, not only just with people with diabetes, but everyone, because otherwise they're just not going to come back, and then they're just going to feel really rubbish, aren't they?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I think for my view on dentistry is that half of what we do is the soft skills of dentistry, and only half of what we do would be technical skills, things like drilling, filling, cleaning. Yeah. And 50% really is building that relationship and motivating people and encouraging people to make changes that are good for them, because we're all aware of what we need to do every day. But actually building those habits and understanding how it's affecting us is the first step. And if we, as dentists, if we don't open that relationship and build that rapport with our patients, then like you said, they're not going to come back, but also they're not going to be able to look after themselves. So we have to sort of guide people on the path. But everyone's different. So you have to use different techniques with everybody. And not everyone's going to respond in the same way. But it's always encouraging. The one thing I do say to my patients, it sounds corny, but I do believe, is the first appointment that you have is always the hardest. Mm. And that hurdle is the biggest. And once you've overcome the first appointment, then, you know, after that, it's going to be a lot easier to come and return to your dentist.
No, I can definitely see that and understand that and appreciate you saying that. So you've obviously got a dual rolling CAD. What's your sort of day-to-day life, work life look like? And is it nice to have that balance between the both roles and actually being in clinics, being with patients, particularly obviously with people with diabetes as well? I guess it's really nice to have that balance between both. And when we get amazing healthcare professionals like yourself come on, and it's interesting tonight to hear this particular perspective, is they have... Some people might be in clinic all the time, and some healthcare professionals might have a bit of both. And I think they always come back to say, look, they really love to be doing all the other stuff, learning more, educating, maybe training people. But I think it really just resonates to them how important it is that you're doing all this because of the people in the clinic themselves, and actually being in there and actually, like say, building that rapport and actually working with them with their oral health. It's so important, right?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I do like the balance, actually. I like having a split week. The reason that I wanted to work with Flow Oral Care was because after so many years of being a dentist and making small changes with people and really impacting their lives, I wanted to get involved with the big changes and a big in dentistry where we're focusing on prevention and we're really disrupting the industry and changing the face of the service that we provide. So I really like to work on both sides. I think where Flow Oral Care is really, really interesting. Interesting part of my week is that I do feel like I'm making a difference and a change.
To the bigger picture.
Yeah, to the bigger picture. And I can't wait for the future where patients are more encouraged and empowered with their own data to focus on prevention. Because every day, as much as I love doing a good filling and I love an extra, I love doing a favorite, it would be great to have a world of dentistry where we are doing prevention and we're not doing as much as a sickness service and we're not just treating people. Because at the end of the day, nothing is as good as your own natural teeth.
Absolutely. So what do you guys find most rewarding about your jobs, or what are the challenges that you face? Will, we'll come to you first.
What do I find most rewarding about my job? To be perfectly honest, it's going to sound quite basic, but it's a powerful emotion, I think, in small businesses. I think when people get excited by what we're doing, whether that's a member of the team, whether that is a customer, whether that's an investor, you know, whether it's, you know, the likes of you guys speaking to us, that really gives me kind of big boost of energy and the kind of motivation to make things happen. So I think there are millions of challenges for small businesses. You're very exposed, and a lot of the time you feel like you really are pushing water uphill. So it requires a lot of grit, a lot of perseverance. And it probably, I think it gets, I think people who tell you that it gets easier the further down you go, I'm not sure that is true, certainly in my experience. So I think that would definitely be, I think, you know, just excitement and passion is, you know, that really is infectious stuff. And when other people feel that, whether we can communicate that effectively to other people, that becomes that's how you really unlock momentum, and then great things start to happen. So I think that's the biggest
reward for you. Yeah,
that's the biggest reward for me. I think biggest challenges. I think in terms of what we're doing, it's I think it's probably the value proposition. I think what we're trying to do here is get people to take control and start tracking, in many ways, what is a symptom-free disease. Whether you, unless it's got to a really critical stage, you might not know you have gum disease. You might not know you're at risk of having cavities. You might not even care that there's a bit of the bacteria is getting into your gums and the rest of your body, and that may generate diabetes in 20 years' time. But trying to get a 30-year-old to care about that, I think, is a hard sell. So that's not to say it's not important. I think, like I said, we don't need to become overly precious and fragile as a society, but we do need to move away from reacting to diseases once they're happening and preventing them. And that requires visibility. But I think getting your man in the street, and you guys are good examples here, you will think, okay, I've got to look after my oral health because I've got diabetes now. If I don't, I'm going to get into a real problem, or I'm going to generate some, I'm going to have advanced periodontal disease in extremity. So easier sell because you've got direct symptoms and you are more at risk. But I think getting people who aren't at risk yet to take control when they don't have symptoms and to care about that, I think that's a much harder sell. So that's probably the biggest, outside of more technical challenges in terms of whatever funding, hiring, acquiring customers. I think that's probably the kind of the big existential challenge, which certainly for us is a kind of a new way of doing things, and that that interplay with not having any symptoms. I think that's tough sometimes.
Yeah, and what about you, Cad? What do you find most rewarding about your job, or the challenges that you face?
So most rewarding about my jobs is that I get to make a change. I guess I get to make an impact on people's lives, whether that's preventing disease or treating disease. I find both my jobs, I get to work really closely with great teams, so we get to get involved together, and I like working on team projects together. So that's the things that I love most about my jobs. And in terms of challenges, similar to what Will was saying, it's hard to motivate people and encourage people to make changes. But I think where I want to add on to that is that sometimes our patients and people are equipped with the information. Sort of everybody knows the information. People aren't motivated to make the change. But oftentimes people do make the change, but the challenge that I face is consistency. What you do every day and the habits that you build are the things that are going to really prevent diseases. So most people are aware, they care enough, they want to do the right thing, and they'll do it. They'll maybe floss every day for about a month, and then that habit will drop off. So it's just focusing on what you do every day, and consistency is a big challenge for me, and motivating people to do that. I think that's where I'm really excited about Flow Oral Care Saliva Test, because that's going to help with consistency, because I can't be at home with my patients. But
tell us a little bit about that then. What is the saliva oral test?
So we have Will's company has created a saliva test where you will effectively, it will be a 2-minute passive drool, 2-minute saliva test. You will fill in a questionnaire, and then we will process it in our lab, and then you will get some feedback. You will be able to understand a little bit about sort of what's going on in your body, with your gum disease risk, with your cavity risk, with your bacteria, and what's going on with your systemic health, so the rest of your body and your inflammation. So we think this is going to be really powerful, because we're going to get to focus on prevention and awareness. You're going to understand what's happening in your body before the problems arise. I can pass over to Will to do a little bit more expansion on that.
Please.
Yeah, sure. So we want to keep this quite simple but engaging to people. That's So yeah, like Cav was saying, this is a 2 minute saliva test. You send your, you answer some questions. Are you diabetic, medication, age, history, etc.? It doesn't take long. You spit into a tube for 2 minutes. It's very easy. You send that back to us. We then look at those two data sources. So the biomarkers in your saliva, what you've told us in terms of lifestyle through your questionnaire, and then also clinical data from trials that we're doing in patients that do have periodontal disease. And we then give you some specific scores which can be used to track whether you are at risk, whether you're healthy, or whether you're in optimum health. And those are across a few key areas. So we give you an overall score, which is a combination of your oral health and your systemic health. We then look at four panels. So inflammation in your gums, cavities, bacterial inflammation, and then systemic inflammation. And we give people a score here out of 10, and it's on a traffic light system, so red, amber, green. So you can see whether you are in a good stage, whether you're going up, whether you're going down. And we want to use that data over time to really encourage people to, you know, understand whether, I don't know, if you've had a bad period, and I don't know, just making things up here, you've started smoking again and your diet has fallen by the wayside, and perhaps your oral care routine has been poor, actually seeing that those changes are having an effect. So there's that aspect. We then give you specific marker scores. So there are a range of protein biomarkers that we look at. We're looking at protein rather than bacteria, because this allows us to detect inflammation at the time of it that's happening. So it's very much a kind of live format. And again, for those biomarker scores, what we're looking at there is identifying whether you're in the optimal range, whether you're in the healthy range, or whether you're actually in an unhealthy range, and seeing whether those levels have gone up or down. So these are tools that will allow both you as the patient and the dental professional to really, you know, to capture on a data-driven level what's happening in your mouth, and to take action before it's too late. So will
this be shared with your dentist team then, so that then they can put support packages in place or talk you through things or make you aware of further things or give you treatments? Is this the idea of this as well?
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. So there are a range of recommendations that we give people off the back of their tests in terms of diet, lifestyle, specific products you can use. So very much, you know, you've got your scores, thanks Flo, so what do I do next? Do these. But that's not always going to be sufficient, and that's not a sacrifice or an alternative to going to the dentist. So we do want people to share these results with the dentist. I think initially we will be distributing these exclusively through dentists to start with. So you'll go to the dentist. The dentist will say, have you heard about Flow? No, what's Flow? You take a Flow test. The dentist has visibility of this data as well. So not only can they use it to try and empower their patients and get them to think, actually, you do need to do something about your gum disease, take this seriously, but they can also monitor patients remotely. So for example, if you were to take a test every quarter, so once every 3 months, the dentist would have visibility of that. So like a kind of a monitoring or a remote monitoring tool, so that they can see if any of their patients are high risk, and rather than waiting till, you know, the problem gets critical and you haven't been to the dentist for 2 years, the dentist says, look, actually, you need to come in earlier. We need to do something about this before it costs you, you know, more time and emotional capital than it would have done treating it early. So that's how this test is going to work.
Yeah.
And I would urge all of you to take advantage of what we're doing at the moment. This is in a research mode, so it'll be going live commercially next year. But what that means is at the moment you can order a test for free. That includes shipping. So if you go onto our website, getflow.com, you'll see on the main page there's a link to order the oral health test. That'll be posted out to you. You can see how it all works, complete the test, send it back to us. We will then we'll then share people's full results by hopefully in a couple of weeks' time in December, once we've completed our machine learning models, which is quite exciting. So, you know, you people who are getting involved at the moment will be quite a select cohort, which is exciting, and you'll be, you know, early adopters for the development of this test, and we're very, very keen.
Do you think this sort of thing will be hopefully enrolled in all sort of dentistry care? And why isn't it already?
That's a very good question. Why isn't it already?
Because surely if I sign up to my dentist, right, they will look at me and check me over and see what sort of level my teeth are, my gums are, et cetera, et cetera. But why aren't they looking at this sort of prevention stuff already, right? Looking at the future.
That's a good question. So, I mean, I'll give my answer, and then I'd actually be interested in to pass over to Kaz.
Yeah, Kaz's point as a dentist, yeah.
I think, why are they not looking at this already? There are two things here. We're not a substitute for dentists here, but I think dentistry, you can tell if someone has got signs of gum disease, but you can't necessarily tell if someone is at risk before it's happened. So this will require a lot more data, but longer term, that would be the holy grail for us. If we could predict signs of gum disease before it happens, that would save people a lot of money, and that would really change the kind of the preventative format for this. So that's one point. And then I think there is a kind of compliance point as well. If your dentist says you got a bit of gum disease, and you go again and they say you've got a bit of gum disease, it's very hard to think about. If it's not hurting you, then you know, how do you know if it's got better or it's got worse? So I think being able to give people, you know, numerical data-driven insight and showing whether they've gone up or down, that may be helpful from a compliance point of view. But I'll pass over to you, because I think you'll have a much more insightful answer than I may give to her as a practicing dentist.
Yeah. So it's a big question. As a dentist, I think there's a few issues really with the prevention. The dentists do focus on prevention, but what we don't have right now is any tools to show patients sort of what's happening in their mouth until the disease has happened. So similar to what Will is saying, and it's more difficult for people to feel motivated to make changes and to understand what they're preventing if we can't show them what's happening inside their body. I would say prevention is a big part of any checkup that you have, but oftentimes it just feels like the same information we're giving to patients over and over again. And so its value and its impact really, really, really has gone down over the years, because everybody knows that when you come to the dentist, we're going to say, please floss every day, please brush twice a day. We're going to give you the same information, but that prevention message and really tailoring it and giving an element of personalized medicine isn't there yet. So we are focusing on it, but we're not able to tell you what's happening, just because the science has been there. What we're working on with Flow, the saliva biomarkers and proteins have been researched extensively, but we haven't actually got a tool yet in the industry that we can use to really showcase what is happening with your biology right now and what you do about it right now. The other half of the answer is that most of the time our patients, you attend the dentist because you have a problem and you need it treated.
Yeah.
And then we will add an element of prevention, but most of our patients' mindset is that I have pain or I have a problem, I want to get it sorted, and then I want to go back to my normal life. So I think it's a mindset shift for both dentists and patients to focus on looking after and preventing diseases is needed. Yep. And hopefully see that will be the best of healthcare.
So can I ask, do you have connections then to linking a bit more to diabetes as well? Do you have connections to like diabetes teams or GPs? Do you work together as a sort of multi-agency or things like that? Because I've had a message come through by Linda, and she says her GP ignored my burning mouth symptoms, but my dentist actually listened and then referred me on to the dental hospital. So I think it's really important that all sort of agencies and teams are really working together. So whether that's the GP or the diabetes team or the dentist, I think it's really important that we all connect together to ultimately help that person with that issue, and particularly us as a community, that person living with diabetes. And so I was asking, do you guys have connections to like other practitioners to help with a wider perspective of care, I guess?
So in the UK, on the NHS, we are, dentistry is a little bit siloed from the rest of healthcare. We sort of work in our surgeries and we meet our patients. We do have access to contact patients, GPs and their other healthcare professionals, but right now the pathways aren't in place for us to collaborate and work with our patients as a team and think about the holistic care.
Do you think we have to work as a team, a collective team, and the pathways should be in place? It's disappointing to hear that they're not. Surely we should all be working together, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. It is disappointing. The NHS did actually change their commissioning. They released a document, I think, in 2019 to talk about this point. And their advice and their guidelines are now promoting interprofessional collaboration. And they provided evidence to NHS commissioning boards as to the future of healthcare, specifically for diabetics, to do with their oral care. So they are getting that underway. I think it will take a little while until it changes.
Yep.
The NHS is aware that it's a problem, and it is disappointing. Sometimes I think for patients, specifically diabetic patients, they see a foot person for their feet, they see an eye person for their eye, they see a dentist for their mouth, they see the GP and the nurse for other diabetes things, and it can feel quite disjointed. So I think as a patient, I'm sure you have more experience than I, of course, in that, and you sort of don't feel looked after as a whole individual person. But those pathways are getting treated, and I think with a greater push from healthcare professionals and patients, we will soon get there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'd be interesting, anyone that's listening now, if you hashtag diabetes chat, or if you want to come on and talk to the guys, sort of your experiences of dentistry care and your diabetes teams, and if at all they've worked together, whether your diabetes teams have advised you on any sort of things or vice versa, it'd be interesting to know. So let us know, hashtag diabetes chat. So let's have a look. A lot of coverage there, guys, well done. You're answering all my questions, are really, really good. And Martin says he's ordered a test kit. There you go, Will. So brilliant. Hopefully that'll will help him. Let's have a look. What about some top tips then? What top tips would you give to our community right now with brushing our teeth and how often they should be brushing their teeth, with the sort of techniques that you've mentioned briefly with like flossing? Just curious, really, like how much toothpaste, how long for? Does it matter what toothbrush? Do these things impact our oral health?
So Kat's going to be the one to speak to here. What I would say is you'll see on our website as well, we sell toothbrushes and toothpaste as well. So of course, if you're looking for a really strong electric toothbrush, we've got a couple of fantastic ones there. And I'm happy to send a discount code after this call or during it. But I think in terms of specific tips, I think that's Karen, you're going to be the person to give these guys the best advice on that front.
Yeah. There's a lot of tips in dentistry. If I had to pick my favorite tips and tricks, especially for our diabetic patients, I would say the basics, just brushing twice a day. It doesn't matter whether you're using manual or electric, but what I would add here is that it is much better to use an electric so that you can get, it's much easier to do a good technique. So it's about effective brushing. And if you can use a manual brush and do a perfect technique, then it's fine. But for most people, it is hard to get that perfect technique. You want to use an electric brush to really help guide you around your mouth. Sometimes they can feel like a big investment, but you're going to be using that brush every day, twice a day, and you're going to be keeping your teeth. So I would say yes to electric brushes. The next thing I would say is flossing feels really, really difficult. A lot of people struggle with the string floss, the traditional string floss. But go into your dentist, go and visit your local hygienist and ask them to show you how to use it in your mouth. That can always be the most powerful tool. Because even when you're watching videos online, it's not the same as somebody actually watching what you do. Take your toothbrush with you to your dentist and hygienist. Take your floss with you and show them what you're doing. That is the best way to to get an improvement on your technique. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, I would say try and get some little incidental brushes, because the spaces between your teeth need to be cleaned. If you're only brushing alone, you're only cleaning about 50 to 70% of your mouth. So you want to make sure that you get in there with either a little brush, which can be easier to use, especially if you have any sort of nerve problems or neuropathy. You might want little brushes. And my final technique, top tip, is to, when you finish brushing, make sure you spit everything out and do not rinse your mouth. So don't rinse any of that lovely fluoride from your toothpaste out. It might feel strange the first few times you do.
So don't use mouthwash.
No, so brush, so floss first, yeah. Brush, and then spit everything out. So spit, don't rinse. Don't rinse any of that lovely fluoride off your teeth. Mouthwash can be used at a separate time, but it should not be used at the same time as brushing. I know the way it's advertised.
I never knew that. I thought, from what I've understood previously, is you do the whole process like you just said, and then you use mouthwash. Wow.
The reason I wouldn't recommend that, and the guidelines don't recommend that, is that when you're using mouthwash, there is much less fluoride in the mouthwash compared to toothpaste. So your toothpaste has got a good, strong amount of fluoride, and you don't want to then rinse that off with a lower amount of fluoride, especially when you have diabetes. You need to take extra care. So spit, don't rinse. If that's the only tip that you change, then I'm really happy.
Yeah, brilliant. We have a couple of questions coming through from guys that are listening. Hearing says, join late, interested to know what I can do to help my child with diabetic oral care. What advice would you guys give? Obviously, you are within the dentist industry, also a dentist yourself, Cad. Obviously, you're not diabetes experts, but what advice would you give this particular person that's joined and sent the message?
Hopefully your child is seeing a dentist. If they're not already, please make them aware that your child has diabetes. A lot of patients think that when you visit the dentist, we have access to your health records, but we don't. So if you don't let us know that your child is diabetic, then we will not know. The next thing is just make sure that you're brushing with your child. A lot of times people think their child is independent enough to brush on their own. And 2 minutes brushing for a child is not often 2 minutes. Even for an adult, it's a struggle to understand what 2 minutes is. So I'd say brush with them. Yep. Use a fun timer. There's lots of timers out there. You can use a traditional sand timer. You can use an electric brush with a little timer, but using a timer will really help them look after their mouth. And because they have diabetes, the other thing is, I know that you're aware because you're all very conscious about your sugars, and that's why I love working with diabetic patients. But it's not about how much sugar they're having, it's about how often they're having it. So really reducing how often they're having a snack, a sugary snack would really help.
Yeah. But another question that's come through then, what about brushing your teeth after treating a hypo? So say if, I don't know, let's expand on this sort of question coming through, is if I had a hypo at 3 a.m., and had a full fat Coke and jelly babies, and it was a quite a long hypo, and I'm having a lot of sugar. What would you advise on that from your point? If I was coming into your clinic and you knew my background as type 1 diabetic, what sort of advice would you give from your perspective? A diabetes team might have theirs, but what would you say for that?
Yep. So I'm, again, like you said, I'm a dentist, so I'm thinking about your mouth. After you have any kind of food or anything, you know, apart from water, goes into your mouth, you should not be brushing your teeth within at least 20 minutes to half an hour. So if you can, it might not be practical, but if you can stay up a little bit longer, give your mouth mm-hmm. some time before mm-hmm. brushing, that would be ideal.
Is this so you like you're not brushing away, the sugar around?
Yeah, because if you brush straight away, after eating or drinking anything that's not like water, things to think about are sugars, acidic foods. All of that sugar and all of the acidic food, you're effectively going to be brushing it back into your enamel, which is really, really porous. Add something sugary and it's going to do some damage to your enamel and your gums ultimately. So if you can stay up maybe an extra 20 minutes, rinse your mouth out and then brush your teeth,
that would be fantastic. If it's not practical, and you know, I live in the real world as well, most people may know my advice 100% of the time. And at least if you really need to get back to sleep immediately, at least use a mouthwash. It's not going to have the same effect. I really don't want anyone to think it's going to have the same effect. But at least you're going to be putting some fluoride through your mouth and reducing the acid. So tip number one, to wait 20 minutes to half an hour and then brush. Or tip number two, if you really have to, mouthwash and then go back to sleep. That's a difficult thing to manage.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think it's so important that they have this multi-agency connection, that where you guys as dentists are working with our diabetes teams and that pathway. I think it's so important, and hopefully it will join up soon rather than later. A few more questions coming from the community, actually. Martin says, what is your view on water jet cleaners? I have no idea what this is, so I have no idea what the response is going to come at. But clearly the community, diabetes community, are fully engaged in tonight's conversation. Yeah, over to you guys.
So I might start here. Water flossers have become really, really popular. If you don't know what they look like an electric toothbrush, and they effectively pump out a little bit of water in there, and you use them in between your teeth, and they are advertised to be used instead of flossing. A lot of people love them, especially if you brush your teeth in the shower. They get water everywhere, and I find them quite messy personally. I don't use a water flosser. They do have a place in terms of oral care, but I think a lot of the gum disease experts, the periodontal experts, have sort of describe water flosses as washing your dishes without scrubbing them. So if the water flosser is going to help dislodge a lot of things, but if you are going to use one, you will need to sort of run around your teeth with some sort of floss additionally. It's not going to be a water flosser and then that's it. It will be a water flosser as an addition. See it as an addition to your oral care routine, as opposed to using it instead of floss. So.
Yeah.
You want to scrub and wash.
Leon from Australia, guys, who's listening in, says, does the spit don't rinse that we were talking before equally apply to sensitivity toothpaste, e.g. Cenodrome? Is that how you pronounce it? Cenodrome? However, do you know what Sensodyne? I mean by that? Sensodyne. There you go. Yes, there you go. Sensodyne.
Yeah, it's all toothpaste. So, and even more so with sensitive toothpaste, you don't want to rinse off the sensitive toothpaste. Most sensitive toothpaste, like Sensodyne, imagine your teeth like your skin. If you have open pores on your face and your teeth, the sensitive toothpaste is going to block and plug all those little pores in your teeth to protect them and to reduce that sensitivity. If you are then rinsing that off, that's not going to have the effect that you need. Unfortunately for sensitivity, there is no cure, but you have to use that sensitive toothpaste regularly to make sure that all those open little sensitive pores are shut. So spit don't rinse with any type of toothpaste unless your healthcare professional or dentist has told you otherwise. There will be certain minor cases, so I don't want to speak for every single person's outcome, but generally, unless your dentist has told you otherwise, you want to make sure that you're spitting and not rincing.
Brilliant. Lots of questions coming through that saving my job here. Absolutely love the interaction here. Here's a question. Is there any particular... So you talked about before with brushing your teeth when you got hypos and stuff, and waiting the sort of 20 minutes, that sort of thing, to brush your teeth or use the mouthwash. What happens if you're drinking from a straw and it's not directly going onto your teeth? Does it have the same sort of impact?
Drinking from a straw is great because it will help to protect a few of your teeth, especially the ones at the front, and reduce its direct impact on your teeth. But with any sugars or anything you're having, it's all about sort of the pH of your mouth. So your mouth environment becomes acidic, which it does when you have sugars, then you still sort of have to follow that rule. It is going to help, definitely going to help, using a straw. It's more likely that you're just going to be swallowing the sugar, but
it can still impact sort of if your mouth is acidic or not. So using a straw is good, but it's not going to reverse any of that risk. It's going to reduce the risk.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you. If you have any questions, guys, please get them over to us. And this last 5-10 minutes, we'll get them over to Cad and Will. Sorry, Will, you took a bit of a back seat there.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, great questions. Very good questions. There's only one person who was going to answer them.
Brilliant stuff. What about then, just to understand a little bit about sort of oral health complications and potentially the that kind of affect anyone who and including us people that have diabetes, what oral health complications are there and what should we be looking out for, the sort of symptoms?
That's a very good question. So I will, given I've been paused for a little bit, I'll pull in CAD when I need some support. But I think it's probably helpful here to just think about it on a non-technical basis to start with. There's a very good, we've got a fantastic advisory board, but this quote actually comes from a woman called Sim Singrauer at the University of Central Lancashire. And she says that if you imagine the bloodstream as a train, it's going to take passengers on. And some of those passengers are the bacteria in your mouth, and they're then going to go everywhere around the body. So you're going to get some that are going to get off in the brain, some in the artery walls of your heart, some in the pancreas, some in the liver. So I always quite like that as a metaphor, just to think about your gums as being, you know, very permeable part of tissue ultimately, and everything that goes into your mouth, it's then being washed around your body. So when you think about it like that, you think, oh, actually, okay. The fact, you know, I may be doing myself, you know, a bit of damage here, but you've got no visibility of it. So that is where we're trying to really generate a step change in momentum and show people that their, you know, systemic markers, so markers of inflammation in the rest of their body, will actually go up based or directly related to, you know, based on their gum health. So what are the complications, and that's your question, Tom, that can occur from poor oral health? Well, the answer to that is they are significant, and there is more and more research being done. But just to kind of name check a few of the, you know, the kind of the blockbuster diseases, I suppose. So let's just have a think here. I mean, diabetes is obviously, you know, that is the big one. That's probably going to be the biggest. Type 2 diabetes is probably going to be one of the biggest diseases of the 21st century, and that's largely preventable. But I think poor oral health plays a big part in that. What other diseases? Alzheimer's, I think, you know, there are studies which are being shown there, which are actually finding bacteria from the mouth on the brains of deceased patients with Alzheimer's. Cardiovascular disease, again, think of the bacteria getting into the walls of your heart. And then other diseases, there's a range of obvious ones here. Cancers, which are directly related to your mouth, so gum cancer, oral cancer. Those are all going to be the progression of gum disease can ultimately lead to, you know, to diseases in the mouth itself. But there are, you know, there's a lot of diseases here which people are starting to understand. It's not only they're linked to your oral health, they can actually be directly caused by poor oral health. So if we could show people a way to take control of that and screen on a basis before it's too late, that becomes quite engaging. But again, that comes back to the challenge that I mentioned earlier in terms of encouraging and stimulating people to check for symptom-free disease. So that would be my summary of conditions that are most heavily linked to gum disease and poor oral health. Cad, you might have some further thoughts to add to that.
Yeah. So if we're focusing on the diabetic community, just to add to what Will said, the symptoms to look out for are things like red gums, swollen gums. If your gums feel a little bit painful, a little bit funny, I think you had a tweet earlier about somebody who had burning mouth syndrome.
Yep.
That can often go undetected for a long time, because sometimes when we have
a little niggling pain, a little strange pain. We don't know what it is. We sort of ignore it. So any of these little symptoms that you have, speak to your dentist about it. Bad breath. If your teeth look a little bit different, or if you're spitting blood, or you notice that when you floss, it bleeds a little bit. These are things that are not normal, and your body is showing you that you need to make a change. But like Will said, a lot of the signs and symptoms of gum disease are invisible to you as a person. So it's really important to get into the dentist, let them know you have diabetes, and get a good checkup. And in terms of conditions that are linked, Will has covered all of them, the links with the mouth and the body. But just to focus in on diabetes here, you are at a risk, more higher risk of getting gum disease, but you're also at a higher risk of getting sort of mouth infections. And you might take longer to heal from these kind of infections. So it's really important to really clean your mouth. And the other big one that people don't really talk about, because it doesn't seem important, but it is sort of dry mouth. You might see the word xerostomia around, which is quite a long, complicated word, but it just means dry mouth. So if you have a dry mouth, it means you need to hydrate more. But having a dry mouth also increases your risk of getting tooth cavities, and also getting sort of gum disease. So just look out for, if your mouth feels a bit dry in the morning, that can happen anyway when you have diabetes, but people don't think about the impact that it might have on your sort of teeth.
Brilliant. A few little bits before we conclude. Question. Someone's asked, can you ask if they have come across a patient presenting with oral frost and then identified with other osmotic symptoms and then resulted in referring to GP hospital for diabetes diagnosis? Is that anything that you've come across?
So is the question that they have oral thrush or that?
So they said, can you ask if you've come across any patients presenting, so initially with oral frost, and then they've identified with other, is it osmotic symptoms, and then later then have been referred to the GP in the hospital, and that's where they've been diagnosed with diabetes. So just wondering if you've come across any of that through your clinics or anything.
Yeah. So oral thrush is actually quite common, a bit more so for diabetics. So I have come across oral thrush. It's normally sort of treated quite quickly at your dentist if you catch it early. And you just need to have sort of an antifungal mouthwash normally.
Yeah.
And it goes away. But there have been, in terms of your question with patients diagnosed with diabetes, there have been a lot more patients diagnosed with diabetes from visiting the dentist nowadays. A lot of the periodontal clinics that I refer to, they actually do a little diabetes check now. So people are getting diagnosed. And the other thing is the university that I trained in, Birmingham University, is really focused on gum. And what they would say is sometimes they had patients attending, and I've had patients attending, where we're doing your gum treatment, the patient is following the advice, they're flossing every day. Mm-hmm. But the gum disease isn't healing. And then the next question that we have is, what's going on with your body? And so then we will send your doctor to get a sugar test, and we'll just lightly mention you really should get the sugar test. And patients have been diagnosed that way. So we have dentists are mental in that journey, because we're seeing your disease, we're seeing your inflammation, and we need to find out why it's not healing. So yeah, there have been a lot more cases of dentists working beyond our scope a little bit. Work out of the mouth, but once they get that diabetes diagnosis and they start accessing treatment, their gum disease dramatically. So they have been cases.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, guys. Lots of questions coming through and people commenting in the group chat, and people also listening and find it really fascinating. Just a final bit, really. What sort of resources would you sort of signpost people to maybe go look out or check out, like more information about oral health and diabetes, or just oral health in general? Where would you kind of say go learn more, or where do you recommend, or what should people do?
I'll give a couple of suggestions to start with. I mean, we're a small resource, but there are some, for anyone that's more interested in some of the kind of academic studies, there's one particularly interesting paper which is on our website, written by two members of our advisory board, which is on a which is a study between people with suffering from type 2 diabetes and periodontal health, and actually showing that a really effective periodontal, so oral care routine, was actually more effective than the, you know, than insulin drugs in reducing the level of diabetes. I think absolutely fascinating article there. I think generally speaking, I mean, we need to work with diabetes groups much more significantly for all the reasons that you said, getting it into the kind of an essential part of that screening and monitoring process for diabetics.
Yeah, but definitely,
we've spoken with Diabetes UK before, and it's genuinely quite siloed as an area still. So there probably isn't the level of people understand the links there, but there's not a level of resource. So Cad, you might have some other questions on that maybe.
Yeah,
or points to cover.
No, I think Will's right. We have got a really fascinating article on our website. It's one that dentists, healthcare professionals access and read to understand what's happening. So if any of your listeners want to read it, it would be great. In terms of patient-friendly resources, if you go onto the BSP website, I will send you a link, Tom, so you can put it
Please
on your
do.
Twitter.
Yeah.
They actually have a whole section on diabetes and gum disease, and they have really nice infographics that are easy to follow. And sometimes the NHS website is pretty good. They do have a little bit of resource, nothing too specific to diabetes, but the BSP website is a resource that dentists look at, all healthcare professionals look at, also patients. So I will send a link.
Please do, yeah. Yeah,
what's happening. But also, if you do your test, you'll get a little bit of insight into what's going on with your body and some clinical sort of actions as well.
Super. Following from the periodontal disease, just so quickly, what is that? And a question that's come through has said, what proportion of patients with periodontal disease have a history of current smoking or ex-smoking, out of curiosity?
Do you want to start, Will, or...?
I think that's probably a better one for you to start with, actually. Do you want to have more table?
Okay, that's fine. So periodontitis, it's a fancy word for gum disease. There are two main types of gum disease. You might have heard the word gingivitis thrown around and periodontitis. The way I like to think about them is sort of type 1, type 2. They are not type 1, type 2, but when I'm having conversations, I think sometimes periodontitis feels very, very technical. So when you have gingivitis or periodontitis, it is ultimately the inflammation of your gums. So your gums are getting really inflamed, they're getting red, they're getting sore, and they're quite unhappy. So generally this happens with gingivitis. So maybe you're not flossing effectively, maybe you haven't seen the dentist or a professional clean in a while, maybe the technique that you're using to brush, you might be missing certain parts of your mouth, so plaque builds up on your teeth. You might see it on your teeth, it can look yellow, it's sticky at the beginning. Once that plaque gets hard, then it will stick to your teeth. Once it's stuck to your teeth, you won't be able to remove it at home, and you do need to come in and see a dentist or a hygienist to get your teeth cleaned. But if it sticks around for long enough, then your gums are not very happy and they will get inflamed. So they'll look bleeding, they'll be red, they'll be sore. You might have some bad breath, and you might even be able to see it on your teeth. It looks quite yellow. So if that sticks around for long enough, and you have any other inflammation or any other things that you're doing, then it can become periodontitis. The top three risk factors for periodontitis is smoking. That's like one of the top reasons that people get periodontitis. Then it is having a family history. So if anyone older in your family, like parents, grandparents, lost their teeth at an early age, they might have had periodontitis or have had gum disease, or at a much higher risk. And the final one is actually diabetes. So the diabetic community is really key. It's really key here to get you guys involved to prevent, because just having diabetes is one of the top three risk factors to getting gum disease. The difference between the two diseases is that with periodontitis, it will affect the bone around your teeth. So all your teeth are held in your mouth with bone, the bone in your jaw. And when you have periodontitis, you start to lose that bone. So it's almost like your body is attacking itself. And if you continue to lose that bone around your teeth, eventually your teeth will sort of start moving and you will lose them. So that's gum disease in a nutshell. I can share an infographic about that because it's sometimes hard to imagine it.
Yeah, visually see it.
About it.
But yeah, but in terms of smoking, if you smoke and you have diabetes, you're at a significantly increased risk. It doesn't mean you're definitely going to get it, but it is much more likely. And you want to sort of start taking the next steps. Talk to your dentist about your habits. Never feel embarrassed or shy. We're here to help. So just open up that conversation. There's a lot of smoking, quit smoking resources on the NHS website. There are smoking centres that we can refer you to, free on the NHS. So definitely access those, because your diabetes might not be something that you can completely eradicate, but smoking is a habit that you can hopefully eventually quit from to reduce your risk.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, guys, for tonight coming on and being our guest speakers. You know what I mean? It's one of them subjects which is it can maybe worry people, but we don't do this chat to do that. We do it to help, and we inform and educate, and not only for us to learn, but I guess hopefully for you guys to come on to our community chat tonight and take away a little bit from the community, whether it's from the responses that are coming through on the tweets or just the conversation that we're having. It's, you know what I mean, working together, and it's been really interesting. And I think it's all about raising awareness and doing it in the best possible way we can. And it's been really, really insightful. If I was to say to you, just to conclude, if you could summarize or give your sort of top three tips or the sort of takeaway messages from tonight's chat, what would you summarize? What advice would you give to someone who's listening now or listening back on the podcast? What advice would you give?
So I think for me, you know, this is all about early prevention is better than reacting. So how do you do that? I'm a big believer in the power of, you know, data to do that. So focus on prevention, I think, would be number one for me. Cad, maybe over to you whilst I think of the next one.
Yeah.
Go kind of to and fro here.
Yeah, that's fine. So I agree with Will, prevention, prevention, prevention. I think my next top tip would be visit your dentist and hygienist and just open that conversation and be really honest. I don't want anyone to ever feel embarrassed or scared or worried to be completely honest about their habits and what's happening in their lives. And maybe they wake up at 3 a.m. and need to have some sugar because you're having a hypo. We've seen it all before. You're never the worst case. So just feel comfortable to be honest with your dentist, because the more honest you are, the better help you can get. I'll pass back to Will. The third one, he's got one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, last one is, it's trying to think of a more specific thing to say here. It's, you know, it's never too late, I think. I personally think it's quite easy with a lot of healthcare. I think, well, I could have started doing that, but now it's too late. And, you know, I've already got gum disease. My risk is already high. I don't think it's ever too late. I think you can always, prevention is definitely better than being reactive, but I don't think it's ever too late to change habits, and that's only going to have a positive impact. I think if we could all start to focus on thinking a bit more like that, that would have a really compound effect on our own healthcare and then population healthcare. So that would be my parting tip.
Thank you so much. That's really cool, guys. Was there anything else you wanted to note or mention before you head off tonight? Tonight's chat. Is there anything I've missed? I don't know. I think it's been such a fascinating chat and really educational. So a big thank you.
No, the last thing with me, I think, would just be we're very keen to work with people who have a real, you know, I talked about symptom-free disease here. So people who have a real medical necessity to manage and control their oral health, I think, is, you know, as diabetics, you fall centrally into that category. So we're very keen to, you know, to kind of grow our relationships better. They call, you know, centrally into that flow with diabetes communities, whether those are support groups, podcasts like this. So, you know, so please do, you know, please do get in contact with us. We're a small team of 8 people So we are, that means we're busy, but we're responsive at the same time. So it's a busy, get involved, order one of the tests, they're free. And yeah, for help us, you know, help us shape, I think shape the, you know, the delivery of oral health in the future and for diabetes, how that story looks.
Fantastic. Thank you, Will and Cad, for coming on tonight, talking about oral health, diabetes, and talking about Flow Oral Care. Really, really fascinating chat and really interactive with the community tonight. Thank you, guys, and enjoy the rest of your evening, Will, here in the UK, and good morning to you, Cad, over there in Tokyo. What time is it now? Is it 6:45 or something?
Yeah, it is. It's 6:45 a.m. I'm heading to Buddhist temple, Sensoji temple, this morning, and that will, in terms of mental health, that will help look after my mental health and start the day in a relaxed way. So thank you for starting my day, guys.
Cheers, it's been a pleasure. Cheers, guys.
Thanks very much, Tom. Thanks for having us.